Hi, this is Dr. Margaret Paul, and I'm really happy to be with all of you this evening to talk about how come your partner might not want to be having sex with you, or how come you might not want to be having sex with your partner. We're going to be dealing with both of those issues. This is one of the most common issues that I deal with in relationships. Especially long-term relationships, it seems to be, in fact, research indicates that over 50% of people have this problem in their relationship. So it's a very, very common issue. So before we get into this, I'm just going to tell you that we're going to be dealing with this issue, and then I will be talking about what to do with it, how to heal this issue, and then I will talk for a few minutes on some of the products that we have available for you to help you do the learning that you might want to be doing to heal this and many other issues. So I'd like to start by telling you the story of a couple of my clients. Michael and Debbie came to me with this issue. Michael, they had been married for about 10 years, and Michael was very interested in having sex with Debbie, and Debbie was completely not interested in having sex with Michael. And from Michael's point of view, there was something wrong with Debbie, that she wasn't turned on. He felt himself to be a normal, red-blooded American male with a good sex drive. And as I worked with Michael and Debbie, it became apparent that Michael was coming to Debbie with a lot of neediness. He'd have a bad day at work, and he'd come home and he'd want to have sex with Debbie to feel better and to take away his feelings of inadequacy. He wanted sex in order to feel validated. He wanted sex in order to feel like he was worthy and he was lovable. And so what was happening in the relationship is that Debbie felt very pulled on. She felt used. She didn't feel that Michael was coming to her in his power because he was feeling great and loving in his being and he wanted to share his love with her. Instead, she felt him coming needy and like a child, like a needy child who wanted some validation in order to feel okay. And it was clear to Debbie after we started working together for a while that she was not attracted to a needy child, that she was attracted to her husband when he was in his power. In fact, she said that sometimes when she went to see him at work, she would see him, he was a businessman, she would see him as this very powerful businessman, and she'd be very turned on to him at work. But then when he came home, he'd sort of collapse into this neediness and become this little boy, and she just wasn't turned on to little boy. So Michael really did not go for that at all. He just thought there was something wrong with Debbie, and he finally decided to end the relationship. He didn't buy into the fact that he was coming to her from this needy place and that that wasn't a turn-on for her. So he left, and within a few months, he met Kathy. And Kathy was a very, very sexual woman. And she was always ready to have sex. And Michael thought, wow, you know, this is great. This is what I've been wanting. This is what I've been needing. This is wonderful. So what happened is that Michael and Kathy got together. And for a while, things seemed to be okay. But after a while, Michael came in to see me again, and this time he was in a completely different space because suddenly this red-blooded American male who was full of sexuality wasn't feeling turned on, and he just could not understand what was happening. Why? Here's this woman who's very sexy, and he's suddenly not feeling turned on, not feeling attracted to her, not wanting to have sex with her, feeling very resistant. What was going on? Well, what was going on is that the tables were now turned. Kathy, it turns out, was a very needy woman, and she was coming to Michael to get validation. And when he didn't feel like having sex, she'd be upset, she'd be angry, she'd feel rejected, she'd feel hurt. And after a while, he started feeling like he was being demanded of to meet her needs rather than that this was a loving way to share love. And he found himself being completely turned off, and one day it hit him. My God, he was now in the exact same place that Debbie had been in with him, where when she didn't want to have sex, he would get mad, he would take it personally, he would feel rejected, he would shut down, give her the cold shoulder. And this was exactly what was happening with Kathy. She'd get mad, she'd shut down, she'd give him the silent treatment, she'd punish him when he wouldn't have sex with her. And he realized that he had recreated the exact same system, only now he was at the other end of it. So this was a very interesting situation for me to see with a client, where he went from one end of this sexual dynamic to the other end of it. And this is what I see so often, is that it can be with both men and women, where they learn to use sex addictively, where they learn to turn to sex for validation, for love, for feeling adequate, for feeling relaxed, whatever. And when they don't get what they want, they feel rejected, they feel angry, and they punish their partner. Now, if you really think about it, that's not very attractive. You know, what is really attractive is when a person comes to you feeling good about themselves, feeling in their power, valuing themselves, and wanting to share their love, not trying to get love, but wanting to share their love in a sexual way. So this is one of the major issues that happens. Sometimes there's many other issues. There may be pregnancy, there may be kids, there may be tiredness, there may be hormonal issues, menopause, there's a lot of other issues. But when sexuality has been an ongoing issue in a relationship, this is generally the issue. Excuse me. It's generally about the energy that's going on between two people. When people meet and they fall in love, the energy between them is usually pretty open. They're sharing themselves with each other. They're sharing their excitement. They're sharing their learning, their growth. They're sharing their hearts. They're sharing their vulnerability. And this creates a sense of intimacy. But what happens with most people is that most people get together not having healed their deeper fears of rejection and of engulfment, because these are the deeper fears that we learn as we grow up, the fears of rejection, the fears of engulfment. And so what happens as people get together is they start to protect, they start to control. And this is what changes the energy a lot in a relationship. So that if one person, like Michael, for example, has a big fear of rejection, then he may be coming to Debbie, his first wife, from that fear in this needy place. Now, she may have a fear of engulfment. She doesn't want to be controlled. And when he is needy and he's angry and he gets withdrawn, she ends up feeling very, very controlled by that, and she may just completely shut down and turn off. And then when Michael went into his new relationship with Kathy, she was even needier than him. So she came from this deeper fear of rejection, which tapped into his fear of engulfment, his fear of being controlled. But they created the same energy. And it's this energy of coming from what we call an inner bonding, the intention to protect, which means that your heart's not open, you're protected against hurt, you're protected against rejection, against being controlled, and the energy that you create from the intention to protect is not an energy that generates passion or aliveness. It's not an energy that's a turn-on in a relationship. So if you're having these problems, if you're on one end or the other of that system, you might want to take a look at what you're trying to protect against. What are you afraid of? How do you go about closing your heart? In the inner bonding process, we talk about the fact that there's only two intentions. One is to protect against your pain, and the other is to open to learning about your own feelings, about what's really going on between the two of you. And as people move into the intention to learn, what happens is they develop what we call the loving adult self, which means that they learn how to handle rejection. They learn how to handle issues of engulfment without closing down their heart. It's completely unrealistic to expect your partner to be turned on to you if you're coming from a closed, needy, angry place. And it's completely unrealistic for you to expect yourself to be turned on to your partner if you're in resistance, if you're coming from fear of either rejection or engulfment. It's unrealistic for that sexual energy to flow between the two of you if one or both of you are closed down. You know, it's not a turn on to be with somebody who is fragile, is going to get angry if you don't want to have sex, who's going to take it personally, who's not going to care about whether or not you're turned on or what you want. It's just not a turn on. And so it's such a common situation that I run into with couples. In fact, I was speaking with somebody just a couple hours ago who wanted to make love with his wife in the morning. She was busy. She had things to do. And he took it personally, and he felt rejected. And, you know, one of the things we worked on is what stopped him from caring about the fact that his wife had things to do. Why would he think that it's loving of him to expect her to put herself aside because he was feeling needy? He wasn't even necessarily feeling that sexual because he was really tired. But he had been judging himself. He had been putting himself down. He had been neglecting his own feelings. And so he was feeling bad. He was feeling inadequate. And then he wanted her to make him feel better by having sex with him. And then, of course, she's not going to be turned on to him when he's in that space. And so then he feels angry and upset that she's not going to take responsibility for him. But if you really think about it, where's the turn on in that? You know, how can you expect the other person to be turned on, and how can you expect yourself to be turned on when that's the dynamic that's going on, when it's not really about caring? When it's about protection, when it's about control, when it's about neediness, there's just no way that it's going to happen when that is the issue. So the way out of this, and this really can be resolved, is when one or both of you, I mean, it's better when both people, move into an intention to learn about your own feelings, about your own needs, about learning to take responsibility for your own needs. And this is what the inner bonding process is about. It's about not handing over to anybody else the responsibility for making you feel happy and safe and secure and lovable and worthy. It's about learning to take responsibility for yourself in terms of defining your own worth, learning what you need to do to take loving care of yourself so that you operate out of a place of happiness, out of a place of peace, of joy, of a sense of worth. And when two people learn to do that and they come together, then they create a beautiful, loving energy between them. And out of that loving energy comes their passion and their sexuality. So if you are having this issue in your relationship, I want to encourage you to learn and practice inner bonding, because this is the process that's going to help you understand what it means to take 100% responsibility for yourself, to not be making your partner responsible for you, for your feelings of worth, for feeling validated. And I assure you, because I've seen this in the 42 years that I have been working with couples, I've seen over and over again people who believe that they could never get their passion back. I've seen them when they're willing to do their work and take responsibility for themselves, they get it back. And they're shocked and amazed when, after years, sometimes even years, of not having a sexual relationship, they find themselves being turned on to each other. But that is what happens when people learn how to take responsibility for their own needs, when they learn how to develop what we call the loving adult, which means that you have a connection with a higher source of wisdom, of guidance, of love, that you learn how to bring that wisdom and guidance and love down inside, to take care of yourself. You're willing to learn to define your inner worth. You're willing to move beyond the addiction to self-judgment, because this is something that people are often addicted to, is self-judgment. And when you judge yourself, you're going to feel bad. You're going to feel inadequate. Of course you are when you judge yourself. And then what happens with people when they judge themselves, they feel inadequate. Then they want to turn to their partner or somebody for approval, for sex, for something to make them feel better. And so a good part of the inner bonding process is learning how to not judge yourself and to instead be in compassion and caring and the intention to learn about your own feelings rather than self-judgment. I can assure you that if you were to just start to notice how often you judge yourself, and you were to consciously move into compassion for how you feel, for what your needs are, for whatever is going on inside that's difficult, that would change so much in your life, in your personal life, in your work life, and in your sexual life. So one of the things I want to encourage all of you that are listening on the phone and on the web is start to practice noticing how often you judge yourself as being bad or wrong or flawed or inadequate, and what happens when you do that, and then practice moving into compassion for yourself instead. If you were to just do that one thing, if you're having sexual problems in your relationship, you will find that just doing that one thing is going to have a huge, huge effect on it. So I'd like to talk for a few minutes of what is available. We have a wonderful relationship course called the Intimate Relationship Toolbox. And this is a wonderful course for partners to do with each other. It's a 12-week course. And the first 2 weeks are free. And the feedback that I'm getting is that this is an extremely powerful course, that it's very empowering to couples, that it helps them move through many of their stuck places. And so you can find that on our website at innerbonding.com. Just click on the relationship course. And then we have SelfQuest, which is a very, very in-depth software program that really takes you very deeply through the inner bonding process. It takes you through your path, through your belief systems. It's an extremely powerful program. It's taken us 12 years. It took us 12 years to develop this program, and it's only been out very recently. And you can look at SelfQuest at selfquest.com. And for those of you that are on the call for the next 24 hours, if you want to purchase it, you can get a 40% discount, and you can email me at margaret@innerbonding.com. if you are interested in that. And we've gotten incredible feedback. Alanis Morissette, who's a well-known singer and supports Inner Bonding, gave us a wonderful testimonial. You can see it on the website. There's a whole bunch of testimonials about how wonderful SelfQuest is. We have a wonderful membership site. It's an incredible membership site. We're in the process of changing the fee schedule, and there's going to be a tiered fee schedule starting from $9.95 up to $49.95, depending on the benefits that you're going to be getting, and that's going to be on fairly soon. So if you can't afford our current $49.95, you will be able to afford one of the tiers of the membership. We also on the membership site, there's just so much support and so much caring, and it really helps you learn the inner bonding process. I do individual sessions and sessions with couples on the phone. We have many facilitators who also work on the phone, and I also have phone groups. If you cannot afford the individual, I have phone groups, and so there's many ways of getting help. I also do 5-day intensives, which my next one will be in February. In Santa Barbara, and the schedule is on the Inner Bonding site. There's also a free course for those of you that have never done that. That is also on the site. I do these free webinars every few weeks, and if you want any information, you can call 888-6-INNER-BOND for information about anything that we have available. So what I would like to do now is I'd like to open up the lines to any of you who would like to work with me. I have a list of questions here of people who wrote in, which I'm going to answer some of those as well. But if you would like to do some work with me, those of you that are on the phone rather than on the Internet, you can press star 7. Star 7 will unmute you. And then star 6 mutes you again. So if anybody would like to do some work with me, it's very safe. You will not get hurt by it, and you will get some experience of what it's like to work with me and to work with inner bonding. So if you would like to do that, those of you on the phone can press star 7. So while you're trying to decide whether you want to do that, I'm going to read one of the questions that I got. And this is from Jean, and she said, my new boyfriend has intimacy issues. He's very shy, reserved, and has had emotional injuries due to an abusive ex. How can I peel the onion layers to allow him to let me in emotionally? We have great sex only when he initiates. When I try to, he closes down. He also doesn't seem to want to emote in any outward displays of affection in public, although he will hold my hand. No hugs or kisses if anyone else is around. We're in our 50s, so I think this is very unusual at this stage of our lives, don't you? So, first of all, Jean, you're coming from a belief system that you can peel off the onion layers for him, and that's a false belief. You cannot make him want to open. Now, certainly you can be open and loving and create a safe space, but that doesn't mean that you can peel off the onion layers and allow him to let you in. You cannot do that for another person. All you can do is be as open and as loving as you can be, and if he wants to open, then he will. But I think there's a deeper issue here. When somebody is that reserved, when he will only have good sex with you when he initiates it, when there's no outward signs of affection, that indicates a fear of engulfment, a deep fear of engulfment. That is that he probably came from one or two controlling parents. I doubt that the emotional injuries are just due to an abusive ex. I'm sure they started way before that, and he likely participated in whatever was going on with his ex, because we come together at our common level of woundedness. And so whatever was going on with her, he was participating in it. And the symptoms that you're talking about do indicate a fear of engulfment. And you're saying, well, this is unusual in your 50s. But no, it's not at all unusual. People can carry a fear of engulfment, a fear of being controlled by somebody to their grave. And it's a very difficult dynamic. And I want to suggest to you, Jean, that you either just fully accept that this is the way it is and it's probably not going to change, or you move on, because it's not this is not likely to change. You're in your 50s. This has been going on with him for a long time. Unless he's very deeply motivated to learn and practice inner bonding, to get some facilitation, to learn to develop a loving adult who knows how to take care of him when he when the fear of engulfment comes up, so that he can keep his heart open. Unless he's very, very motivated to do that, then this isn't going to change. And please don't kid yourself that you can peel the onion layers off, that you can make him feel safe enough to open, because that is one of the biggest mistakes that people make, that, oh, if I'm loving enough, or I'm kind enough, or I'm gentle enough, or whatever, I can get that other person to change. And it's just not true. People change when they want to. People change when they get some help and they're motivated, but you cannot make it safe enough for him to get beyond his fear of engulfment. So you want to look carefully at whether you want to continue to be in a relationship with somebody who is has that fear, and accept him as he is, or move on. Okay, is there anybody else who would like to, anybody who would like to work with me on online? Doesn't look like anybody is unmuted. Okay. I'm going to move on to another question here. Let's see. There was a very interesting question here. Okay. My life doesn't like my touch. She says she has told me many times what she does and doesn't like, and that I haven't learned these tips, although she's told me and showed me many times. She is actually a massage therapist. This is from Maimon in Jerusalem. Okay, she is actually a massage therapist and thinks she is very sensitive. She also has ADHD and is hypersensitive to tactile stimulation, so she can't stand labels on her shirts, can't use a pillow, find some fabrics itchy. She's generally picky. I think she's too difficult to please. She suggested I read books on sexuality and go to therapy. She has gone for many years individually, and we have also gone as a couple to many different therapists. I wanted to ask you why she doesn't like my touch. And she answered the reasons I just wrote you, that annoys me. She seems to know all the answers herself, so why should I bother? I touch her, she cringes, and so I give up. We used to have sex, but already a few years we haven't managed. I don't even know how to start up with her anymore. I go in the bedroom late at night. She's already agitated that I wait too long till I'm tired. Then I lay next to her. I am usually critical and judgmental. She is not responsive to my touch. One of us usually falls asleep, and that has become our pattern. So there's a lot of stuff here, and mostly what I want to say to you is that your energy, as long as you're going to be critical and judgmental, then the energy through your touch is going to feel bad to her. She probably is a very highly sensitive person, and you might want to learn about that by reading the book, The Highly Sensitive Person, because that's not something she can change. It's not that she's being too picky. It's that this really is true for her, that that's what happens with a highly sensitive person. And it's probably the fact that your energy of judgment and criticalness, and I can hear it all the way through this question, is probably really, really difficult for her. It's going to come through your touch. We can't hide our intention. And when our intention is to control, which it is when you're critical and judgmental, that's one of the most common ways that people control is by being critical and judgmental. So when your intention is to control her, then she's going to feel that in your touch. And there's just no way of hiding that. You cannot hide the energy of that controlling intention at all. It's going to come through your voice. It's going to come through your body language. It's going to come through your touch. And the touch is never going to feel good to her until you're coming from a truly loving, open, and caring space. Now, she probably doesn't understand this either because she's telling you how to touch her. And it's not so much how to touch her, but it's the intention with which you're touching her that's the issue. I mean, you could do exactly what she's telling you to do and still going to feel bad to her if you're coming from a critical and judgmental place. She is likely not in touch with the fact that that's why she doesn't like your touch. But I really want to encourage you to start to learn and practice inner bonding. Start with the free course. There's so much for you to learn on the website. And start to understand that as long as you're coming from a critical, protected, controlling, judgmental place, there's no way, there's just no way that your touch is ever going to feel good to her. So you need to start with working with yourself. Let go of having your eyes on her. And just start to work with yourself and reach a place where you can be around her with a truly open heart. And from that open-hearted place, your touch will begin to feel good to her. You know, I've worked with many people who, even as infants, they couldn't stand to be touched by one or the other of their parents. For example, many people had a mother who was harsh or closed or controlling or judgmental, or and when the mother picked up the baby, it hurt the baby's skin almost, and the baby could not stand being touched by the mother, and the mother would say, "What's wrong? You know, babies like to be touched," but they didn't because the baby was feeling this unloving, needy, controlling, critical energy from the mother. And so nobody likes to be touched with that. It just, it doesn't feel good. And so I want to encourage you to learn and practice inner bonding so that you can approach her from an open and loving state. So is there anybody? Gee, usually I have people lined up who want to work with me, and I've got quite a few people on the phone. But anybody want to press *7 and do some work with me? Okay, I'm going to go on to more questions then. So this is from Cher in Vancouver. Do you think it's possible for a man to want to cuddle every night with his wife, kiss her, be affectionate all day, but never want to have sex with her because he feels that she's overweight? Well, that may be what he's in touch with, but it may not be the whole issue. I mean, certainly men are very visual, and he may enjoy being with you, and he may feel affectionate towards you, but if visually your weight turns him off, then that certainly can be the issue. But there may be other issues going on a deeper level. It may, for many people, weight just even has nothing to do with it at all. It's likely that there's another issue going on, and I want to encourage you to look a little deeper into what control issues may be going on in your relationship, because the weight issue may just be the tip of the iceberg. There may be some resistance on his part to being controlled by you in some way. He may be getting turned off on some other level if he feels you being in any way needy or using food to avoid some responsibility. I mean, there could be all kinds of reasons why he might not be turned on to you other than just the weight, although I'm not discounting the weight, because I work with many men who just, they're so visual that they do get turned off by weight. Okay, anybody else would like to do any work with me? Okay, I'm going to go on to another question then.
Margaret?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, how would you address the issue of menopause and just total loss of sexual desire?
Okay, I'd be happy to address that. What's your name?
My name's Evan.
Evan, okay, Evan. Unfortunately, there are many women who lose their sexual desire when they're menopausal, because a lot of sexual desire is hormonal, and if there is a hormonal imbalance, then they just don't have enough testosterone to feel any sexuality. However, the other side of the coin is that women's sexuality is very different than men's. I'm sure you all know that. And women's sexuality is much more geared to what's going on emotionally, and especially during menopause. It's much women get turned on far less by what's going on hormonally than they do by what's going on romantically and what's going on emotionally in terms of the connection. And what happens with many women is that they may have been somewhat sexual, maybe their hormones were more in balance, they were somewhat sexual, but they may have been giving themselves up a lot, as many women do, to have sex, and then they get to be menopausal, and then it's not tolerable, and they're not willing to give themselves up. But what can happen is if two people really do work on the relationship and develop a closer emotional, spiritual connection in the relationship and bring romance back into the relationship, that can do so much to bypass the hormonal issues that may be going on. So it's not just automatic that women lose their sexuality during menopause. In fact, some women feel more sexual during menopause. And what you want to do is look at what the deeper issues are. What's really going on between you and her in the relationship that may be coming to light now? Because menopause tends to make women more sensitive. And what might have been tolerable in the past may no longer be tolerable now. And so it's an opportunity to look at some of the deeper issues that may be going on in the relationship. You know, the two of you might want to consider taking our Intimate Relationship Toolbox course. That may lead you much more deeply into what the real issues are in the relationship, Evan. So is that helpful to you?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is. There's another issue, and that's, there's probably issues on both of our sides, but one that concerns me on her side is a glass of wine every day that is carried over from dinner into the evening. And I know she comes from a family where alcohol is a big issue. So is that something to be concerned about, or
Now, are you saying that she is just having one glass of wine a day, or she's having wine all day? I'm not clear what you're saying.
When she comes home from work, from dinner on, she keeps the glass of wine going.
So it's not just one glass of wine.
Well, if it's more than one, it's a big one.
So, I mean, it doesn't sound like she's getting drunk every night.
No, not like staggering around or anything like that. But it's a compulsive thing. It's every night.
Yeah, and, you know, for some people, that is what they do. And if it's not interfering with their lives, it may not be a problem. But for other people, see, you know, it's like anything. Anything can be used addictively to avoid responsibility for your feelings, or it can be used just as a form of enjoyment and relaxation. And wine can be like that. People can drink wine because they just like wine and they enjoy it, and it's a form of relaxation. But they can also be drinking it as a way of avoiding responsibility for their feelings. And when people are doing anything or using anything to avoid responsibility for their feelings, then it's addictive. So, you know, not knowing her, I don't know whether she's using it addictively or it's just something that she enjoys. What do you think?
Well, it's especially hard for me because other people in her immediate family of origin, have had very significant alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
And so I see this happening with her, and I just wonder, is this normal? Or could this be affecting our relationship too?
Well, it certainly could be. It certainly could be affecting your relationship. But once again, does it feel to you like she's drinking as an addictive way of avoiding dealing with something? Or is she drinking just because it's something she enjoys? What does your gut tell you about that?
My gut is that it's her best friend, and that's her real place of emotional and intimate connection.
That would not feel good.
And she says that mine is with my work.
Uh-huh. And so she may be experiencing you using your work to avoid your feelings, and you may be experiencing her using alcohol to avoid her feelings. And what I'm going to guess here is that both of you might be avoiding some loneliness and heartache that may be going on between you, and that you may be using work to avoid that loneliness and heartache, and she may be using alcohol to avoid it, because these are difficult feelings. These are the deeper core feelings of life that many people learn to avoid because they're hard. She may be feeling lonely around you. You might be feeling lonely around her. Both of you might have your hearts closed. There may be a lot of protection going on, and you each might be turning to a different addiction as a way of managing that, but all that does is perpetuate the issue. And what I want to suggest to you is, again, to learn and practice inner bonding, because it gives you the skills to manage the feelings rather than avoid them. And this is just so vitally important. Yes, go ahead.
I practice it all the time. I love it. You've helped me so much. I always forward your emails to her, and she won't read them.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're practicing them. You cannot make another person open. And so, once again, that might be very lonely for you. It sounds like you're very lonely in the relationship. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And that's a very tough thing. And it sounds like you're lonely because she doesn't want to be on a learning path with you. You're lonely because she's using alcohol as her connection, rather than really being with you and connecting to you. And when this is the case, when there's one person who really wants to learn and grow, and another person who's shutting down, as it seems like she's doing, then you have a choice to make. You either decide to accept her exactly as she is and learn ways of making yourself happy, or you leave the relationship. But what you can't do is get her to change. And I want to suggest you stop sending her my articles because she's going to feel controlled by that. And it would be better for you to just keep your focus on you and do all you can to make yourself happy and let go of trying to get her to be open or do any changing, and then see what you want to do. Does that make sense to you, Evan?
It makes sense, but it's very scary and very lonely.
It is. Yeah. I understand. It is scary and it is lonely, but it, you know, if you can get your eyes off her, then you're going to be in the position of having to really look at the reality of the relationship and to see if it's something that you want to continue or not.
Well, we've been married 32 years. We have two kids. And
yeah.
It's just very complicated. It's not like it's easy to change.
Oh, I do. I totally understand that, Evan. I, you know, left my marriage after 30 years and three kids because I knew that nothing was going to change and there was no growth for me there. And it was too lonely. I know how difficult it is. And I'm not saying that that's the answer for you. You know, each of us has to look inside and see what, you know, what can we accept and what can't we accept. And for me, it was not acceptable to have a marriage that wasn't going to grow. But I totally understand how difficult and painful that is.
Was that a good decision for you long term?
Oh, it was the best I made. It saved my life. Oh, yeah, because there was no way. I was going to die in that because there was just no way of having the kind of learning and growth that I wanted. And so, yes, it was a really, really good decision for me. It's not one that I ever regretted for a moment. And it was very, very hard because I wanted an intact marriage and an intact family, but I couldn't. I knew that I just couldn't go on in the way that it was going on. So it was a hard and very, very good decision for me.
Well, thank you so much. This is
You're very
helpful.
Welcome. You're and, very welcome. And I want to thank all of you for being on. And I'm going to briefly unmute so I can say goodbye to everybody. And bye, everybody. Thanks
bye.
For being on the
bye
call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.